Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
Leading in today's world is by definition humbling. You know, no one person can do it all or know it all. And if they do claim, then you know what they're full of.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show today. You are in the right place for Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, a podcast helping human-centered leaders master communication to accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. I'm your host, David Dye, president of Let's Grow Leaders. And in this episode, you're going to get specific practices that will help you be a confident, ambitious, decisive leader who's also good at not knowing, leads teams that win, and cultivates trust, resiliency, and high performance. And here to help us do all those things is our guest, Urs Kunig, a former United Nations military peacekeeper and NATO peacekeeping commander, highly accomplished ultra endurance champion, and I know we got to take just a minute to talk about that at some point, executive coach and keynote speaker with 3+ decades helping executive teams and leaders unlock new levels of achievement. And Urs has written a new book called Radical Humility: Be a Badass Leader and a Good Human Being at the same time. Badass leader, good human. Urs, that is going to resonate with our listeners. Welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
Well, thank you so much, David, for the kind introduction. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we are glad you're here. So listen, we're going to dive into radical humility. But before we do, I'd like to get to know you just a little bit better for our listeners' sake by asking you if you could take us back as far back as you want to go here to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader, however you might define that.
Well, I might have to go back to my childhood as a lead scout. So I actually share a story in the book where my dad was very tough on me because I forgot the most important piece of equipment when I was coming back from an overnight scout expedition, the first aid kit. So anyway, my dad was tough on results, tender on people with me. He was very direct about his feedback. But I realized, and then I talked to my dad about it, when you're a leader, people look at you, you're on stage all the time. The show doesn't stop. So me as the lead scout, not having my gear, sends the wrong signal to the rest of the troops. And so so that's the very first time I was probably, I don't know, like 10 or 11. First time where I consciously went, oh, you know, actually, I need to pay attention to how I show up because now I'm in a, you know, inverted commas, leadership position. So the leading by example, the importance of being aware that people observe what you do when, you know, including when you don't think they're watching. So that was sort of ingrained at that early age into me.
Mm. And there's a humility lesson in there too about failing and learning from our opportunities and so forth. So we'll certainly that plays in here. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I certainly have some of those early leadership memories myself of being a scout leader. And I remember as an adult, this was, I forgot my sleeping bag. Talk about things you don't want to forget. Yeah. So Still learning those lessons. Okay.
Totally.
Getting into radical humility. Be a badass leader and a good human being. Urs, you talk about this transition. Really, this book is all about moving from a heroic model of leadership to a humble model of leadership. And I know those words both need some definition, because we often think of heroic, well, that's a good thing. I want to be heroic. But in the context you're speaking of as a leadership perspective characteristic, it's not serving us well. Please explain the difference between heroic and humble leadership.
Absolutely. So heroic leadership is the leader sits on top of the org chart, has all the data, all the information, all the decisions have to flow through him or her, and he or she knows best, makes all the calls, right? And so that has worked, by the way, quite well up until the industrial age, right? So where things weren't moving terribly fast, where things were complicated, but not complex. And so that's the old school leadership, the heroic leadership. And so as you can guess, you know, it slows things down today. So if everything has to go through the leader, you become a bottleneck, you slow things down. And so that's the old school heroic leadership paradigm. And then, you know, what I put forward is that really today's complex, fast moving world, like leading in today's world is by definition humbling. You know, no one person can do it all or know it all. And if they do claim, then you know what they're full of. So that doesn't work, right? So, and it, you know, I've observed the conversation in the business press around humility over the last 15, 20 years, and it's shown up way more over the last 5 to 10 years when CEOs get interviewed. What are the traits, the characteristics we need in our top leaders? It is humility that comes up a lot. And so the way I think of humility, it has sort of three cornerstones. The first one is what people often think of as being humble, having deep self-awareness, seeing myself in line with how others see us. And there's, you know, a couple of pillars below that, including having the humility that I can't, to know that I can't do it all. And, you know, if I put my mind into it, I can do almost anything, but I can't do everything. So that self-awareness piece. The second piece is leading relationally with my team members one-on-one and not just by content expertise. And so that's building meaningful, collaborative relationships with my team members while at the same time holding them to the highest standards. So that's the tough on results, tender on people piece. And then the third piece is leading relationally on an organizational level. And, you know, you and I are deeply familiar with psychological safety, the work that came out of Harvard first. And so that's the organizational relational leadership. And then undergirding all of this is, you know, the famous growth mindset. And we're talking about, you know, seeing failures and mistakes as an opportunity for learning and growing, versus something to be ashamed of, or even worse, sweep under the carpet. So that's in a nutshell the high level definition.
All right. And so to make that shift from being that bottleneck, you recommend 5 shifts in the book. Again, the name of the book is Radical Humility, Be a Badass Leader and a Good Human. So these 5 shifts, and I'll just run through the names and you can give us the sentence description, but I want to dive into a couple of them in some more depth. So the first one is to dig deep, and that's that cultivating self-awareness. You've mentioned a couple of times, number 2, tough on results, tender on people, which I think we can, anybody listening to this show for any length of time, that one's going to make sense right away. Number 3, lead like a compass. So shifting from micromanaging to empowerment and giving the direction. And then number 4 is full transparency. And number 5 is championing a fearless culture. So just walk us through it, a 50,000 foot view, those 5 shifts, and then we'll go a little deeper.
Absolutely. So I briefly talked about the first one, the dig deep, the self-awareness. So yeah, I don't think so. So seeing myself in line with others, see me, focus. And there is a piece around growth mindset, how do I fail successfully on an individual level. The tough one results tend on people. You know, this is the meeting that you have with your boss, David, where the boss sits you down and says, you know what, David, I love you. You know, I value your work so much, and what you're producing is nowhere near good enough. So that's the tough end results, tender on people, holding my people to the highest standards while building meaningful and collaborative relationships. And by the way, the opening of that meeting I just described, I had that happening to me during my NATO peacekeeping mission in the Balkans. My commanding officer opened a meeting like that with me. And what made it made me shrink in my chair. It made me, oh my God, because I knew he cared for me. He really valued me. If he would have yelled at me or chewed me out, I would have tuned him out. Just another, you know, high level officer that is. So our feedback is much more likely to be heard and acted upon if we're actually building meaningful relationships with our people. So that's the second shift. The third shift is lead like a compass. You talked about it. This is having the humility to know that I can't and mustn't do it all myself, but I need to provide true north, a compass versus a detailed map on how to get there. The fourth shift is around full transparency. And this has really two elements. The first one is sharing with vulnerability, being transparent around my own shortcomings as a leader. I have a whole piece in there about the power of vulnerability and how it is the quickest way to build trust. There's fascinating research around that. And it's also about being transparent what we're trying to do as a business. We can never over-communicate our goals, our targets. You know, we, and I'm sure you're aware of that research too. We think our message is heard. No, it's not. Until 150 times, seven different ways, until you cannot get yourself to say it one more time and you hear your people paraphrase the stuff back, only then are you being heard.
Oh, that is so true. I mean, by the time you are sick of hearing it come out of your mouth, other people are only barely beginning to get it.
Exactly. So, you know, of course, this is why we want to stick to three things and not 17 when we communicate our message. And then the last piece I also briefly talked earlier is the fearless culture, so the psychological safety, making it safe for anybody on my team to speak up with questions, crazy ideas, doubts without being shot down, you know, being shamed versus risking their career. So these are the five shifts.
Excellent. So I'd like to dive in a little bit. I want to ask you some questions that I know come up because I hear them from listeners, I hear them from clients, and I'd love to get your perspective on these as we get practical. So Let's take lead like a compass, this idea of not micromanaging, not becoming the bottleneck, not having to make all the decisions, to empowerment, setting that direction, and so on. Because you mentioned earlier in the Tough on Results, Tender on People that there are times where we're going to have the conversation with somebody and say, listen, I care about you. I'm invested in your success. I believe you can do this. And what's happening here is not where it needs to be. Okay. The other side of that, when people are trying to empower it and not be the bottleneck, how would you recommend? So if a listener is thinking, okay, I want to empower and I try to empower, but things are never good enough. People go off in directions that make no sense and they're not adhering to the principle, the design principles or the outcome principles or what have you. And so they get frustrated and think, gosh, I just can't trust these people. I just have to be more directive. And I see that tendency happen over and over again, even when somebody wants to be more empowering. And so they end up becoming the bottleneck that now they're short-circuiting. How do they break that cycle and practically empower in a way that's going to truly help those their folks to work in a way that's going to be meaningful, but also own the decision-making and not be the bottleneck?
Absolutely. Well, you know, you're absolutely right. Like this is something that, you know, we see a lot. And I know we both hear a lot from folks. The first thing I would say is, how clear are you as the boss in communicating what success and what failure looks like? So have you been crystal clear, and I mean like crystal clear, around what the outcome needs to look like? And by the way, have you had your team member paraphrase back to you what success looks like, and so that you cross-check for understanding? That, in my book, is one of the biggest mistakes we all make. I make them still, right? And we're all work in progress. That's, you know, that no question about that. So I would go back and see how clear I have been around success and failure. The other piece in terms of empowerment is being clear with my people, and I think I have an exercise around this in the book, about the things I want them to solve on their own versus I want you to check in with me. For example, technical challenges in your area of expertise, I don't want to be involved. Like, that's your baby, you solve it. If we're starting to have resource scarcity, you feel your project is in conflict with somebody else, someone else's project, then you need to involve me. So I challenge all of us to sit down with our team members and explicitly talk about, these are the decisions and things I expect you to do on your own and pull off, and these are the things you need me, you need to pull me in. So that's the second piece. And then lastly, you know, we need to look at our teams. And so if we've been crystal clear about what needs to happen, if we've made clear when they need to pull us in and when not, and we're keeping our tendency to go back in and check in, how is it going? And like those, you know, seemingly innocent check-ins we so often do as bosses, which were so annoying for our team members. So we're not doing that. And then the outcome is still not what it needs to be. You know, before we start to actually, you know, look at headcount, we need to check, do they have the resources, right? I mean, there is a whole model around this. I can't think of the name. The pipeline, that's right, the development pipeline. So when my people don't deliver, I need to look, where is the bottleneck in the development pipeline? Is it skill? Is it motivation? Is it accountability? Is it actually, you know, the ability to practice that? So, you know, the very last resort is that I might need to make a change, but it always starts with me as the leader in terms of how I clearly defined the expectations.
And I so appreciate you calling out a couple of those specific skills. That first one that you mentioned, we around here, we call that a check for understanding. It is amazing how often, just working with some leaders yesterday, and they were saying they were just developing that skill, just learning it and practicing it. And, you know, at every time, it is amazing when you start checking for understanding the wide distance between whatever you thought you were communicating and what people actually receive. That's just human nature. There's nothing wrong with anybody, not you, not them. It's just part of the communication skills we have to cultivate. And so, listener, if you're like, okay, I need to do that, and you haven't listened to the first episode of this season, 5-6 weeks back, the first episode is a full-length treatment of just checking for understanding. So there's a resource you can go back and dig in there. And then you mentioned strategic empowerment. So clarifying, where are you supposed to be making decisions on your own? Where do you need to involve somebody else? And where are you not allowed and should not be making decisions? Yeah, regulatory, or my favorite is how you use the brand, the logo, the trademark. Like, that is defined. You cannot just go get creative with it because, oh, it doesn't quite fit, I'm going to stretch it. Oh, that one drives me nuts.
That's funny. Yeah,
that's my favorite version of that. But yeah, so there are, for any of us, we have those things. So the more clarity we can establish on the front end, and I love what you're saying, like, when that's not happening, let's self-reflect, let's look and check, and are we really doing those things? And then if it's not happening, how's the person equipped, supported, provisioned, trained, all of those elements? And then if we go through all of that and we're still not there, then they might not be the right fit for the
right. But
that is human-centered. Thanks. Absolutely. Thanks. So that's a deeper dive into Lead Like a Compass. I want to do one more here. Let's do full transparency, because this is another one that I think people continue to struggle with. Even if they have intellectual assent, yeah, okay, I get what you're saying. Transparency, okay, but, and there's always that but, and people struggle with it. And so you were calling out two different kinds of transparency that are both important here. The first one was a more personal type of transparency about my own shortcomings, about what I do well, what I don't do well, those kinds of things. And then the second was organizational transparency, and both super vital. So I'd like to maybe talk about each one, and maybe let's take personal transparency first.
Yeah.
And you've got a great exercise in the book for readers and listeners to be able to do that. Some different ways of approaching personal transparency that are not just like, blah, you know, barfing up all your flaws all over people, but doing this in a very productive way. So let's start there.
So, you know, often when I talk about it, so the key word here is show up with some vulnerability. And to be clear, you know, this is not opening every meeting in tears. My parents never really loved me, you know, like, no, that's not it. So people always go right there, right? And so it's about getting at eye level, saying things like, hey, David, I'm not quite sure about this. What do you think? It's about sharing a meaningful personal goal. Because if I demonstrate that I am also trying to get better, I'm work in progress, much like you. And so the key element is that we do personal transparency, vulnerability in three acts. The first act is me. The second act is my share, maybe a weakness, maybe I'm not quite sure about something. And the third act is, what am I doing about it? And so I have a wonderful little anecdote about the former CEO of Intuit, Brad Smith, who he, by the way, his tenure was before the scandal they had last year. He volunteered to his board to do a 360. I assume your listeners know the 360 surveys, you know, everybody around you anonymously. So he volunteered. He then shared his results, not only with his board, but with the entire company. He emailed his 360 report, including his action steps, or his third act, to every single person in the company. And in the process, he built huge trust. You know, if the CEO is, you know, admitting his weaknesses, you know, in public and is working on stuff, maybe I can do the same thing. So trust does not come before vulnerability, but vulnerability is one of the quickest ways to build trust. And to be clear, this is not black and white. Like, leadership is a thinking person sport. I might be going very deep with you today, but with my other coworker, you know, we sort of start about what we do did over the weekend. And that's totally fine. That's why I have to be able to read the room, read people. This is a little aside here quickly. You actually have to love people to be a great leader. I am all in on that. Doesn't mean
I
you have
totally
to be
totally agree.
You don't have to be an extrovert. It's not the same thing at all, right? But you fundamentally have to love people, meaning you take an interest in other people's point of view. You're learning from them. You get the thrill out of helping them to grow. So the vulnerability is one of the quickest ways to build trust in an appropriate way. And by the way, I'm keenly aware, you know, I get some pushback, and rightly so. Sometimes I had a wonderful podcast with an African-American female former corporate executive. And she goes, like, you're kidding me? If I would have shown up with vulnerability, like, I couldn't do it. I would have just been shot down. And so I own, as an old white guy, it is very different for me to show up with vulnerability than for some other people. And so this is, again, why we need to read the room and while it is situational. But on the balance of things, as a society, as a leadership society, we are still not vulnerable enough. We're still not open enough about what we're working on. Because you know what? Everybody admires perfection from a distance and nobody can relate to it. So it's the vulnerability loop. Of course, we all are familiar with Brené Brown. You know, it's the first thing I look in you, a bit of vulnerability, and it's the last thing I want to show you. But that's how we build connection.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And the reality, and like you said, everybody admires it from a distance, but nobody relates to it, because if, you know, if you're perfect, well, I'm not, so I'm hosed if that's what it takes. And and we know that nobody's perfect. So if we're presenting that way, we know it's not true. So it's like, what is that? And so the types of vulnerability you're talking about, you know, I think that's so important. It's not, oh, I'm crying and parents never love me and all that. It's depending on the situation, it might be just disclosing a personal interest for a low level safety thing, but a deeper level, it might be, hey, we've got a challenge ahead of us as a team, and it's going to take all of us to solve it. I know the question. I don't claim to have all the answers, but here's the question. That's vulnerability, and in a way that inspires other people's input when you're genuinely interested. So, you know, the second half of this full transparency that you're talking about is the openness and honesty in terms of organizational goals, data, process, standing. And that's another area that people sometimes struggle with. And sometimes I think it's a passive omission, like I just am not aware I need to be sharing it. And then other times there's an insecurity, like, well, I don't want to share this. And I'm not exactly sure why, but what do you see keeps people from sharing the critical information that their team needs in order to be making better decisions, strategic decisions?
I actually think It's primarily the lack of awareness how much it's needed from our team members. You know, we have so much going on all the time, right? And so we're lucky if we get our weekly one-on-ones in, right? So, okay, now I have to constantly talk about what we're doing. So I think it's not bad intentions. I really don't think that's the case at all. It's sort of a lack of awareness how much our team members, you know, especially the younger generation, we all know like they want purpose, they want meaning. Why are we doing the stuff we're doing, right? And so you want to engage you Gen Zs, you better communicate and over-communicate why we're doing what we're doing and where it's going to take us. And so so I think that's the first one. The second one is, you know, and of course there is, again, it's not black and white. Certain things, when you have a deal going on for an M&A, you can't share anything, right? And that's not what I'm talking about. But I would push all of us. I mean, I have a wonderful example in the book. Buffer, a social media company that posts publicly everybody's salaries. Right. And so, and of course, open, you know, book management has been around for a long time and there's lots of research done on it, and you don't do this overnight. But, you know, if everybody knows that I'm making a quarter of a million of the CEO, I better provide that value. And so in terms of transparency, even salary transparency, I think it does all of us a hell of a lot of good if we move towards a bit more sharing and a bit more transparency. But again, I think it's primarily a question of we're not aware how much our people really need that. And so the other piece I would, you know, in terms of concrete examples, during my one-on-ones with my team members, not only do I regularly ask for feedback on how I'm doing, so what do I do well as a boss, what can I do better, but also what pieces of information have I not shared that you need to know, that you're interested in, that you want to know? So checking in one-on-one, because in a team meeting, people might be intimidated. Make it safe one-on-one. And then once that safety has been established, then you can bring it to the team meeting. So specifically checking in for their need for information.
I love that question. So I have a team member I'm thinking of who about, 4 or 5 months ago, I asked that question and her answer was, holy cow. It was like, yeah, you're right. Why have I not given you that information? And she could be so much more effective if she had it. And how long would I have waited if I hadn't asked?
Yeah.
So that is a powerful takeaway. Ask in your one-on-one situation, what is information you need that I have not given you? And find out. You don't have to guess.
Exactly. Yeah.
So powerful. All right. Our guest today is Urs Koenig. The book is Radical Humility, Be a Badass Leader and a Good Human. Urs, I got one more question for you, but before we get there, tell our listener they want to learn more. Obviously, you can find the book anywhere books are sold, but if they want to connect with you, find out more, what's the next step? Where should they go?
Absolutely. Shoot me an email. It's on my website, urskoenig.com. I'm very active on LinkedIn, my primary platform. Love to engage with folks. So LinkedIn and the website, that's how to get in touch with me.
And I can vouch that Urs is indeed very active on LinkedIn, witness firsthand, so recommend it. All right, Urs, so I'm going to go to, I said I got to talk about the ultra endurance stuff here. So I'm going to go here for our last question. And I'm coming from the perspective of you are a decorated ultra endurance athlete in your career. I have done a 50K and a 50-mile trail run. I am not decorated. My goal is to finish those suckers. So that's, and I've managed to finish two of those. I've taken this year off because injury and a lot of life stuff going on. So I'm healing, but I'm going to get back to it next year. From a leadership perspective, what has your involvement in that sport and that discipline and focus and so forth, what are some of the takeaways for you as an ultra endurance athlete that you have found to be super helpful for leaders in general?
Absolutely. Congrats on the 50K, David. Well done.
Thanks. I did the 50K and then I did a 50-mile last year, which it still blows my mind. It's actually the 1 year anniversary as we're recording this. So I'm like, so it's top of mind. So anyway, go ahead.
And I feel it with injuries. But I think two things. The first one is about the value of immersing myself in the here and now. It's almost a meditative state. And so when I did this summer an Everesting, which is it's like 6 weeks ago, the equivalent of climb Mount Everest nonstop and either ride a mountain bike down or take the gondola down. I did it by myself. There's events around the US, 29 or 29, that do this in an organized fashion. I did it solo. And what I love about these events, organized or by yourself, is everything else falls away. I don't think about my business. I don't think about my kids. I don't think about it. And if I do, sort of, it's, you know, that comes and goes. It's like what we, I do a bit of mindfulness work. What we talk as of the ideal state in meditation, we see a thought come, we recognize it, and we put it away. And we focus on the here and now. In meditation, it's breathing. In ultra endurance competition, it's literally, do I drink enough? Do I have enough to eat? Am I going too fast? Am I going too slow? You know, do I need to go to the bathroom? Like, literally, it becomes very basic. And there's beauty in the basics. And I know, see, you're nodding, so you can relate. It sounds like it. So there is beauty in the basics. And so coming back to leadership, there is beauty in the basics. The basics of spending time with people, because obviously leadership is getting stuff done through and with people. Just, if you know, all the stuff we have to deal with. But at the end of the day, it's about being present with my team and sharing those moments. So anyway, that's one thing. The other piece is maybe more practical, the value of focus. Like, athletes are so good. You know, you can think what you want of Lance Armstrong, but the guy is amazing at compartmentalizing and at focusing. And every world-class athlete is an absolute champion at focusing, at saying no to anything that's not helping me achieve the goal. And so the value of, and that third one, actually, sorry, I just thought of that, is, you know, you learn to miserably fail. You learn to fail. Like, you really do, right? I mean, I share a story in the book. I almost died during an ultra endurance race, and it kicked my behind, not just physically, but mentally, for a long time. And so being able to come back from setbacks, mistakes, races you didn't finish, races you didn't win, you wanted to win, like, that is something that is directly applicable, not just to leadership, but to life.
Absolutely. I was just so curious on your perspective there. And, you know, for listener, I would say that if you're listening to some of these takeaways from Urs, and you're like, wow, yeah, I hear that. There are so many practical exercises and examples and ways of implementing these that are in the book beyond, and we have just scratched the surface today. So I definitely recommend you check out Radical Humility. If you've been a fan of Winning Well, of Courageous Cultures, and you'd really like to take those principles and get them down to your leadership specifically in a super practical way, Radical Humility is a great way to do that. Urs, thank you so much for being a guest today. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I did too. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And listener, if you've enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of these practical communication skills to help you accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build that career with the respect and influence you deserve. Until next time, invest in that radical humility and be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.